Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high and canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Fidelia. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, King.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you so much, Audrey. Yes, your applause was a little bit premature. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're facing a whole new switchboard, a whole new look. For the console for Blog Talk Radio and the Jumble Justice Radio Show, and it looks great, and it's going to have some marvelous potential, and I'll be talking about that a little more next week. It even includes a chat function right up on my my host switchboard, but we had a little flaw when I clicked on Audrey's mic. Audrey, you disappeared for about 10 minutes, or about 10 seconds, but you're back, and we're thankful for that. Thank you for getting us on the show. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Blog Talk Radio Network, and I'm your host, Keith Haley, for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. And Johnny Cash, he did it again, and Emily, did you think it was a little fast, the song, I've Been Everywhere, Man? It just seemed like it was a 16th of a beat faster than it normally is. I don't know if that's a new feature of the console, but we'll have to see how that goes. But thank you, Emma and Mike, for being with us tonight. And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, for how many shows do you think we've done? 52, including tonight. Tonight is our 52nd show, so in some ways that's special. I suppose 51 is special, but our purpose is the same as we go into a second year. We want to discuss the news, the issues, the events, and developments in the always difficult and sometimes humorous field of criminal justice, and what a field it is. Our show is dedicated to those tireless police, court, corrections, both institutional and community and juvenile, and those others that work in the juvenile justice system. And we thank them for the service that they provide for us throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world. What we like to say on this show is that we take an inside look at criminal justice practice and its professionals, and I think if you were around as recently as last week, you will agree with that. Wasn't it enjoyable to hear Mr. Doug Brothers talk about his job as director of the Claremont County Juvenile Court System, and to talk about his dedication over the years and the growth of that community, and all of those wayward and potentially strong and valuable young people, but the kind of dedication that he and his staff have to working with them. I couldn't think of a better person that we've been once serving in that capacity. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Blog Talk Radio. It's a leading edge technology, and Alan Levy is our CEO of Blog Talk Radio, the genius behind the medium. And we're up now to hundreds of shows a day. I just saw that Laura Ingraham now has a show advertising her new book and talking about her new book on Blog Talk Radio Network. So in a matter of 1 year, this network has gone to just a few dozen of shows, perhaps maybe 100, to literally more than 2,000 shows. I think they're saying maybe we have 100 shows a day on Blog Talk Radio Network now. And if you look at the schedule with this new look, let me mention that now. One of the new features is for all of the shows that have been going on a long time, and we've been there almost since the end, day one, now you can replay all of the shows. In other words, you could go back to show number one for the Jumbo Justice Radio Show and replay it, use it for classes or whatever you want to do. But I think that's really a marvelous feature. Before, they only archived or left archived like 5 shows that you could play back or download. But now you can get all of the shows on any one of the all of the segments on any one of the shows that are on the Blog Talk Radio Network. And if you're just joining, what a time to join Blog Talk Radio and get your own show, because any person in the interest group, in the organization, can have their own radio show broadcasting as much as, I think, 14, 15 hours a week, if you would like. And that show will go worldwide in streaming audio live to an unlimited number of listeners worldwide. Isn't that something? I mean, it goes worldwide, and in fact, tonight we'll perhaps reminisce a little bit, and we'll have, in fact, we had an international caller on our first show, and I'll talk more about that a little bit later. So there are lots of new features. Take some time if you're browsing around on the internet in the office on a little break, of course, not during work hours. Go look at the Blog Talk Radio Network, and not only look at our show, but look at all the different features that are available on all the shows that are there. If you can't find something that interests you, or several things, on Blog Talk Radio, you're probably not interested in anything. And if you're listening to this, we're not talking to you anyway. So anyway, tonight's show is going to be kind of interesting. We're going to take a look at some criminal justice news and some things that I really don't often get to comment on too much when I have a guest. So I thought tonight we would spend a little time on some of these news items that are fairly current and interesting, and they stretch across a number of topics, and then perhaps we might reminisce just a little bit by playing a segment or a portion of our first radio show. And that first radio show had to do with the Haitian prison system, and then some of the authors in the book Strange But Real, and we'll let you listen to some of that here a little bit later in the show. Well, what you can do, of course, you can listen to this on your Windows Media Player, which you're probably doing, or you could actually call into that number, and I can see you on the switchboard. And when you call in to 347-996-5983, 347-996-5983, I can hold you up on this brand-new switchboard, which is much easier to read and work with. It doesn't jump around. And 5 of us can be on there at the same time. That's an addition. It's 5 more people beyond me can be on there. So 6 of us can actually be on the show talking to each other and hear the entire radio show on our cell phone. And then, again, the cost of this, other than your cell phone numbers or minutes, is absolutely nothing. And, of course, we have the tradition of the blonde joke. And, Audrey, what do you think? Do you think how this is going to work tonight on the new network? We'll try to find your joke here and see if we can turn you on. I think this is a good one, and we're going to let you do your first joke, your blonde joke, on the brand new Blog Talk Radio look. And here we go. You ready? Yeah? Okay. Sure. Okay. Take another sip of coffee. That's fine. All right. Here we go.
Professor Haley, this is a blonde joke involving several blonde women in a car that was stopped by the police. Mike thinks you will like this one a lot. sitting on the side of the highway waiting to catch speeding drivers. A state police officer sees a car pottering along at 22 miles per hour. He thinks to himself, this driver is just as dangerous as a speeder. So he turns on his lights and pulls the driver over. Approaching the car, he notices that there are 5 blonde old ladies, 2 in the front seat and 3 in the back, eyes wide and white as ghosts. The blonde driver, obviously confused, says to him, officer, I don't understand. I was doing exactly the speed limit. What seems to be the problem? Ma'am, the officer replies, you weren't speeding, but you should know that driving slower than the speed limit can also be a danger to other drivers. Slower than the speed limit? She asked. No, sir, I was doing the speed limit exactly. 22 miles an hour, the old blonde woman says a bit proudly. The state police officer, trying to contain a chuckle, explains to her that 22 was the route number, not the speed limit. A bit embarrassed, the woman grinned, and thanked the officer for pointing out her error. But before I let you go, ma'am, I have to ask, is everyone in this car okay? These women seem awfully shaken, and they haven't muttered a single peep this whole time. The officer asks, oh, they'll be all right in a little while, officer. We just got off route 119.
Oh, that's a good one, and you know that is a very good one. 119 miles an hour, that'd be good with that crew driving, with or that woman driving. So, you know, one of the things we've been remiss in doing, Emily, in the last several weeks, you keep pointing that out to me. Probably several months, we haven't been playing the advertisement of the Ohio Coalition Against Firearms, and we're all interested in reducing firearms deaths and I thought and injuries. And I thought tonight it might be good to refresh ourselves on what that advertisement said. So I think I'm going to go ahead and play. Click it on, Mike, would you?
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Oh, we thank the Ohio Coalition, and I think that's aimed or directed toward, isn't it, Mike, toward gangsters and criminals in the state of Ohio, so that they won't carry concealed weapons. But anyway, we thank them for that. One of the things I wanted to mention tonight that discovered here this past week, you know, as the world of the internet and information processing is rapidly changing, and it's not a new idea that people are gunning for Microsoft, is it? But this past week, I've been a big fan of Gmail, and if you're not using Gmail, to me, you're not using the most efficient and productive email system in the world. It's got just about everything you would ever want, but they have Google Documents. In other words, you can store documents on the internet, work on documents on the internet, start documents on the internet, and not actually have like Microsoft Office. But this week, they started something new called Presentations, and what that is like their PowerPoints. So if you get a Gmail account and sign up right away, you can click on Get Yourself Google Documents and Presentations. And when you make those presentations, you can put your pictures in whatever order, and it has many, many settings and backgrounds and a lot of features that you would expect from something like PowerPoint, but it also has on the side, over on the right side of the picture, I mean of each slide, a chat dialog box. In other words, you can make comments, click enter, and your comments go up there, and people, anybody that you log in or permit, you put their email address in there, anybody's email address that is logged into that presentation is permitted to join that for a chat and comment on the content of the slideshow, actually on each page. For faculty members, instructors, training people, maybe doing in-service training in law enforcement or corrections, this is a really nice, outstanding feature. And I think what's going to happen with Google is what just happened with IBM Lotus Symphony yesterday. You probably read or perhaps did not, but IBM released the Lotus Symphony word processing and access and our database and spreadsheet system onto the internet, and it's absolutely free. And prior to about year 2000, I used Lotus AMI Pro and their 123 system. I mean, so easy to work, so beautiful presentations and layouts. And then they lost the battle to Microsoft for some reason, and now they're back, but this time it's free. So I think these two items are a pretty good example of everybody sort of gunning for Microsoft. So let's see what happens. I think there are 50 million users. Is it 500 million users of Microsoft Office around the world? I'm not sure what that would be, 50 million or 500 million, but I remember one of those two figures. But now the idea is, of course, is to move all this to the web, and you won't be storing these software programs on your computer itself. But take a look at Google Docs and presentations if you haven't done that. Get yourself a Gmail account, and I think you'll find it absolutely fascinating. And sometimes a little scary, you know, Google doesn't forget anything. And now with Google Desktop, it's even a little more, I won't call it intrusive, but let's call it memorative. It doesn't forget a thing. But the Lotus Symphony program is really outstanding. Well, let's take a little bit, a look at a little of the criminal justice news tonight. And I certainly don't want to put this in the category of humorous because I don't think it could be any more serious, but certainly one of the worst things a police officer could probably do is leave some kind of significant evidence at the scene of a call or a crime or an accident. And I don't know if you read this week, but boy, this really is serious. The police are accused of ignoring victims in Gary, Indiana. Two teens killed in a crash, says the subtitle, were left at the side of the road for several hours after the accident, is what the families say. But the parents of two high school seniors who died in a car crash said their sons were left along the side of a road for several hours after the police overlooked them while investigating the accident. And as it turns out, there were four young men in this vehicle. It was a single vehicle accident. And Brandon Smith and Dominic Green were killed in this accident, according to the Lake County Coroner's Office. The two other occupants survived the crash and told police and emergency workers that two of their friends were still at the crash site, said Darren Smith, a Gary firefighter, and Brandon's uncle. Arthur Smith, Brandon Smith's father, one of the boys, said police refused to listen to the two survivors and did not look for their sons or for Green. He said he found the boys himself when he went to the scene of the crash. He said, "It took me all of 5 minutes to find the boys, and they were dead. They were right there. I didn't look under anything. I just seen my son. I seen my baby." Must have been a very emotional, tearful thing for him to happen. But what do you suppose happens to police officers in something like that? How, you know, I wasn't there, and we always have to remember that, you know, there are circumstances we don't know from news stories, that's for sure. And many of them aren't right, but how in the world could they miss two boys when they told them, the other survivors told them that they were actually at the scene? The Gary Police Department Commander Sam Roberts, he told the Post-Tribune that the officer who responded to the accident did not deviate from departmental procedures. He could not explain why the two teens were left along the roadside and said he did not yet know all the details of the case. And, of course, an investigation is underway. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens in a case like that. But that's something remarkable. Back in the Ice Age when I was a police officer, I had a train car accident once. And there were three or four young men in that car, and it was a convertible. And they were all knocked out of the car when I got there. And another crew came at the same time. We were working single car, officer cars. I couldn't see any of them. I could see the crashed car and the train had stopped, but I could hear them. I could hear four different sets of murmurs and moans, and we went and picked them up. And oddly enough, not one of those guys was seriously injured. But when we had here several weeks ago with the Norfolk Southern Railroad police chief on there, our special agent in charge, Larry Shuck, I would mention to him that great railroad safety poster that shows the car and the train and says, you know, if we tie, you lose. And certainly that is the case. And Ohio has so many crossings that it's just absolutely incredible. You know, Tennessee has been tinkering here in the last several weeks with some executions. Last week, they actually executed somebody, and they used lethal injection. And a federal judge on Wednesday blocked an execution this week that was scheduled to go because he said that the lethal injection procedure was unconstitutional. This is not an unfamiliar plea when we talk about lethal injection. It says Judge Alita Trauger, a federal district court here, ruled that the state cannot execute the prisoner, Edward Harbison, 52, because Tennessee's use of a three-drug lethal injection would present a substantial risk of unnecessary pain. Mr. Harbison had been scheduled to die by lethal injection this next Wednesday. Tennessee, it says, is among 11 states in which executions have been postponed or blocked over concerns about lethal injection and whether it constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. And Joe Dieter here at the Death Penalty Information Center, that data comes from him. He says 37 of 38 states with the death penalty allow lethal injection. Nebraska requires electrocution. And I don't know what my choice would be there. But anyway, in February, Governor Bredesen imposed a 90-day moratorium on four executions while the state revised its death penalty protocols, which had been criticized as a hodgepodge of conflicting, confusing instructions. So they got the instructions clarified. Now comes along this decision that that they can't do it. And what's the claim here? It's saying that one of the drugs masks massive pain on the part of the person. When you look at them while they're dying by lethal injection, it looks like there's no problem. But in fact, inside, they're experiencing this excruciating pain. Who would know? I do know that veterinarians have taken a claim against this particular procedure or the way we do lethal injections in the United States. What did he do? It's kind of interesting. Mr. Harbison, who's been on death row since he was convicted in, I'll take a guess at the year, 1983. He was convicted of murder for beating an elderly woman to death. He had it appealed as a sentence, arguing that the new protocols were illegal. In a ruling, Judge Trugner said that the protocols do not safeguard against pain. If the three drugs are not administered with proper anesthesia, she wrote, the result could be a terrifying, excruciating death. And we know that, dying by lethal injection is a more pleasant, more humane way. But apparently the experts are saying that that it's not. My co-author in our Introduction to Criminal Justice book, Bob Bohm, he's probably written a lot about this particular issue and the method of execution. But here's one more case in a line of a litany of cases that are trying to stop or at least retard the use of the death penalty. And it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. And okay, we still have states that permit hanging. And that's been done. And we have a state that permits the firing squad. So that's interesting. In fact, the first person to be executed in 1977 was Gary Gilmore. And after the Supreme Court legitimated death penalty again in Gregg versus Georgia, and that was he died by firing squad. Interesting. Here's one I thought thought about and sort of lived in some ways over my academic career, but this comes out of the Chronicle of Higher Education. And the title of the article is High Profile Arrests in College Football Lead to Debate About the Coach's Role. It's interesting. It says a string of recent arrests in some of the country's most prominent college football programs has led to a debate about holding coaches more accountable for their players' off-field indiscretions. That goes against the basic premise of the law, isn't it? One person can't be held responsible for the behavior of another, but anyway, let's see what they say. Five University of Florida players have been arrested since the team won the national championship in January, and six players of the University of Texas, the 2005 national champ, have been arrested in the past 4 months. After James Henry, a red-shirt freshman running back at Texas, was charged this week with two felony counts of obstruction and tampering with evidence, the Longhorns' head coach, get this, Mack Brown, said he took full responsibility for his program's repeated problems. He said, "It's all on me, and it's on me alone. It's obvious that I need to be more accountable and do a better job." In response to a rise in these off-field problems in recent years, many athletic departments have established codes of conduct for athletes, spelling out how players will be penalized if they break team rules or get in trouble with the law. What do you need to spell out there? If you commit a robbery, or you commit a burglary, or you commit a rape, or a grand larceny, it seems like the law has already spelled that out, but perhaps some people don't know that. But some college sports experts say athletics departments need to hold the coaches accountable and make the program suffer consequences because the players misbehave. We have a professor here at Duke University. He's the co-director of the Center for Sports Law and Policy, and he said in this interview that the association, NCAA, could limit coaches recruiting or restricting on teams' postseason play, that this would be a way to do something about that. He suggested that Miles Brand, the NCAA's president, could follow the lead of Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the National Football League, who recently stiffened the league's policy for handling players who step outside the lines. He said the NCAA could start to hold people more accountable. But anyway, this is, I'm not sure. I haven't looked at any statistics. Young people, sometimes I get the idea that there might be a higher rate of crime among some of these athletes than the population in general, but I'm not sure about that. But they quote one more person in this this article, and I remember reading about her several years ago in the Chronicle Pirate. Her name is Sharon K. Stoll, and she's a professor of physical education at the University of Idaho. And she's the director of the Center for Ethical Theory and Honor in Competition and Sport. Did you copy that down? She's the director for the Center for Ethical Theory and Honor in Competition and Sport. And she said behavior clauses won't do any good unless players learn the difference between right and wrong. So what she's done is she runs workshops aimed to teach college athletes moral values. And I remember the article that I read about her in this training several years ago was that this was called morality training for athletes. I wonder if it's really that complicated. I can remember going to university. I taught a very large university quite a while back, and the star running back was pulling armed robberies in the dormitories. I don't know how much morality training someone would need to realize that that's against the law. And then there was another case of one of our star basketball players, and he was from New York City. So when the team went to play in Madison Square Garden on his break time, he went out and became a jack roller. For those of you not inside the CJ Field, a jack roller, somebody that robs inebriates and drunks and the homeless out in alleys and on the street. So unfortunately, he ran into some undercover New York cops that looked like inebriates and homeless on the street, where they kind of had their wallet or some money sticking out. And when he robbed them, he was arrested. He was arrested for that. But, do you think morality training is the answer to that particular problem? I'm not sure. I'm not sure that it is. Interesting news article, and we'll have to see. And, again, I would point out, as many academics professors would in the country, they've had marvelous students, student-athletes, in their classes, and have gone on and done marvelous things, but this small percentage that give both college sports and professional sports a bad name, I guess we have to live with them. But it's a world we live in with cable television. They run these stories ad nauseum. Here's an interesting article today, or yesterday, was published in the Washington Times, 2 days ago actually, and it's the American Civil Liberties Union. If you go to their site, they've actually started a new surveillance society clock on the order of a doomsday clock. And this has been created by the ACLU, and it symbolizes the encroachment of government spying on private citizens as part of the war against terrorism. And the TikTok is fast approaching midnight, says the ACLU. The extension of privacy is a real possibility, said Barry Steinhardt, director of the ACLU Technology and Liberty Project. We believe that privacy is not yet dead. That's good. He said, but it is a patient on life support. The online clock is patterned after the doomsday clock that was created by the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists in 1947 to warn against a nuclear holocaust. Midnight symbolized a total 1984-style surveillance society. So where are we on the clock? On the clock, we're at 11:56, according to the ACLU. It says each generation deserves its own clock. He thought it was time that we had one on privacy. And here's what he blames all this on. And he said, you know, I think it's thoughtful. He said that an explosive increase in new technology in data mining is fueling the trend and creating a false sense of security. From satellites to national identity systems, the National Security Agency's warrantless surveillance program, DNA data banking, and web search engines that store every query, and even our satellites are part of that. He says this false sense of security of surveillance society threatens to turn our country into a place where individuals are constantly susceptible to being trapped by data errors or misinterpretations, illegal use of information by rogue government workers. You can have abuses by political leaders, or perhaps most insidiously, we'll see expanded legal uses of information for all kinds of new purposes, the report says. So what's happened is the ACLU has come out with their second report since 2003 on the state of surveillance and intrusion in our society. I haven't read the whole report yet, but it looks interesting. I'm going to read it. The surveillance clock, a display viewable from the ACLU's website, is now set at 6 minutes before midnight. So we have 6 minutes to go. They do say that things get better, though. They'll push the clock back to, you know, who knows, maybe 11:30, 11 o'clock or whatever. He said this would have seemed crazy 20 years ago, but after 9/11, September 11, you know, maybe not so crazy. Their new report, or in January 2003, the report was titled Bigger Monster, Weaker Chains, The Growth of the American Surveillance Society. A number of policy milestones enacted by the government in this current decade rivals that of the entire past century, and I think most people would agree with that. He's talking about since 2000, you've got the USA Patriot Act, the Real ID Act, the proliferation of identity checks, health privacy legislation, and the NSA terrorist surveillance program. All these things have been approved by Congress, and of course, I think this week the president was asking for not only a re-up on this act, that's on the new surveillance act that's only going to last 6 months, but he wanted more surveillance potential as a result of added to that that legislation. So the ACLU cites 10 major policies regarding privacy in the U.S., including the founding of the NSA, the application of security numbers, and the FBI's creation of electronic fingerprint database. But I thought this was really a kind of a good summary in terms of what we ought to be watching for or careful about. And they're saying, do we really want to live in a society where three things happen, where every move is recorded, where every transaction is recorded and available to government and other agencies, and where every communication we make by phone, by computer, by chat, by whatever, is monitored by the government. Hopefully monitored with ethics in mind, but again, there are abuses and this type of thing. That's every move, every transaction, every communication. And I don't know whether you've seen this or not, but this is on the ACLU's website. We're going to have to go back to some old technology to see if it works. So what I'm going to do is play something here and go to the ACLU website or just Google ACLU pizza ordering. And what you'll do is you'll get this little clip that gives you an idea of maybe in the not-too-distant future that this is the kind of thing that happens. So I hope this works for us. We're sort of reaching the normal technology here. We'll have to see what happens.
Pizza Palace, guaranteed hot 30 minutes or it's free. This is Mary. May I take your order?
Hi, Mary.
Yes, I'd like an order.
This is Mr. Kelly?
Yes.
Thank you for calling again, sir. I hear your national identification number is 610-204-9998-45-54610. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. I see you live at 736 Montrose Court, but you're calling from your cell phone. Are you at home?
I'm just leaving work, but I'm...
Oh, we can deliver to Bob's Auto Supply. That's at 175 Lincoln Avenue, yes?
No, I'm on my way home. How do you know all this stuff?
We just got wired into the system, sir.
Oh, well, I'd like to order a couple of your double meat special pizzas.
Sure thing. There'll be a new $20 charge for those, sir.
What do you mean?
Sir, the system shows me that your medical records indicate that you have high blood pressure and extremely high cholesterol. Luckily, we have a new agreement with your national health care provider that allows us to sell you double meat pies as long as you agree to waive all future claims of liability.
What?
Do you agree, sir? You can sign the form when we deliver, but there is a charge for processing. The total is $67 even.
$67?
Well, that includes the delivery surcharge of $15 to cover the added risk to our driver of traveling through an orange zone.
I live in an orange zone?
Now you do. Looks like there was another robbery on Montrose yesterday. You could save $48 if you ordered our special Sprint submarine combo and picked it up yourself. Comes with tofu sticks. Those are very tasty, sir. Good value, too.
But I want double meat.
Well, I'm sure you can afford the $67, then. You just bought those tickets to Hawaii. They weren't cheap, eh? Oh, but I see you checked out the budget beach bum at the library last week. Up to you, sir.
All right. I'll get the Sprout subs.
Good choice, sir. Gotta watch that waist if you're hitting the beach, eh? 42 inches. Wow. Man, I'd say tofu and sprouts is, like, required.
That's how much?
Just between you and me, there's a $3 off coupon in this month's Total Men's Fitness magazine. Your wife, Betty, subscribes to that, right? Anyhow, clip that and it's $19.99 even. Whoa, looks like you maxed out on all your credit cards. Bring cash, okay?
I want to stop this from happening.
Very interesting, right? And what you can't see, of course, is that when you go to that site and you play it yourself, there's a little access database file there, and the woman that's the clerk that's taking the call, she's clicking onto all these different files, his health records, his shopping, his credit cards, that type of thing. But, you know, fiction, of course, but with data mining, I don't know how far away we are, maybe from something like that. One more comment about the surveillance business. I thought you might find this interesting. In Great Britain, that just about photographs everything that moves and doesn't move, correct? We know that they have more surveillance cameras than any other place in the world, and they have the average Brit gets, or the Brit gets photographed about 450 to 500 times a day. They say it's actually moving up higher than that now because of more cameras, and of course they record your car. When your car moves from its parking place in London, it actually picks up, they take a picture of your automobile and all the cars that surround it. And of course, they're using lots of license plate number reading software. But we talked once on the show here several months ago about a New Jersey beach community where the officers are actually going to wear little webcams on their shirts or their whatever they wear, their outer clothing, and they don't have to hold it in the hand. Well, Britain's going a step farther. The UK cops are going to get helmet cameras. Police in England are getting helmet cams, mini digital cameras that are strapped to the helmet, headbands of patrolling police officers that will be used to film things like rowdy late-night bar scenes, underage drinkers, controversial stop and search confrontations, and domestic violence incidents. The cameras can record, if you can believe this, 400 hours of footage, and they have a soundtrack on their hard drive. The battery life lasts 8 to 12 hours, so these things must be good, right? The footage can be played back on a 4-inch screen attached to the officer's belt. So if the officer can't remember where he or she was, I guess if they got some spare time, they can turn up their little viewer and see actually where they've been. Kind of an interesting idea. Then it says that the cameras have been tested for months by officers in Devon and Cornwall, and it's hoped that the head-mounted video system will improve the quality of evidence gathered during domestic violence incidents. The test found that the helmet cam had significant advantages over handheld cams, I can imagine. Officers did not need the support of a minder to use the equipment. Both hands remained free
and their peripheral vision was not hindered by the use of the head cams. What are officials hoping for? They're hoping that this new technology will increase the number of criminals who are brought to justice, of course. But the cameras are expensive, price not given, and the department has said that they will not have enough funds to outfit every officer with the cameras. Rather, they will use them only during their tour of duty. In other words, I guess you switch them off, but I don't think that means that they want to be use them when they're off duty, too. But I can't imagine this. I mean, everything that will be photographed during the officer's tour of duty, I suppose you could turn it on if it tracks 400 hours. That certainly will cover your tour of duty in one day, 1 month, for sure. But isn't that interesting that they're actually going to do that? I thought this was an interesting idea, too. You know, over the United States, we have the problem of getting police officers, and I know the situation is dire. In fact, we had one of the detectives in the Dallas Police Recruiting Unit on the radio show perhaps three months ago, and he was talking about how difficult it was, and Dallas, of course, goes across the entire nation to find police officers and gives a substantial portion of their selection process testing at, well, maybe not a substantial portion, but a lot of things at remote locations. And most agencies don't do that anymore, but they're going to have to. And if you look at officer.com and look at employment, or if you look at policeemployment.com, or you look at American Police Beat magazine, you'll just see job ad after job ad of openings for police departments. But what's happened is that quality control is the big issue. There's still lots of people applying for police jobs, but you and I would probably agree that they're not the kind of people that we want to be suited up and out on the duty, and the person that we want answering our call when we call for our life's emergency once or two times as we live. It says here, according to a recent story in USA Today, this is an article in American Police Beat, if you never see that magazine. It says the latest police entrance exam results have been a little bit less than desired. Of the finalists eligible for 400 available jobs in the city of Las Vegas, this year at least 70% are expected to fail the background and polygraph exams. And people probably don't know that might be listening that aren't inside the field, and even those that inside don't study it. We probably spend more time, money, and energy on selecting police officers than any other position in our society. And a lot of these agencies, it'll be a 15, 18, 20-step process that people will have to go through, physical and mental and academic and background and stress testing, all sorts of things. It's very complicated and very, very costly. But it said 70% are expected to fail. Officials say the reasons for these failures, are you ready, are attempts to conceal a range of criminal activities ranging from prostitution to fraud and drug use. The washout rate is alarming to Las Vegas police because they plan to hire at least 400 officers every year for the next 5 years. Can you believe that? And I've had former students go out there and work in Las Vegas, and of course you've been to Las Vegas yourself. It's a very exciting place to work as a police officer. And you know, I don't know if they like being tagged with that City of Sin or Sim City, I think is what unofficially they call themselves out there. But anyway, it's a very interesting place to work. He says the difficulties are obviously a nationwide problem for law enforcement. In Phoenix, more than a third of the qualified applicants are failing the polygraph exams. In Orlando, Florida, about half of the applicants are failing the critical pre-polygraph interviews. So these are people who don't even get to the polygraph exam. So many of these experts say the problems with finding qualified and ethical people go back about 7 years. And I'll bet you can figure out one of the things that's caused problems with that. You know, what we really want in police agencies is someone that's willing to serve and really do want to serve the public. And it took us in the criminal justice field quite a bit of time to actually realize that. Police selectors were always a little skeptical. People said, well, I want to help others. I want to serve people. Because most people thought, you know, you took the job because you needed you needed employment, which was true of lots of people. But they found out through studying over the years that the people with that motivation, in fact, are the best. If you want to help people, I couldn't think of any position in society more apropos than serving as a police officer. It would do everything from, you know, deliver babies to, you know, whatever people's problems are. But the big problem that is, or one thing that's hurting, of course, is the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And a study determined here recently that 11,380 officers were called for military reserve service in 2003 alone, compared with just 2,600 new police hires. So we take 11,380 off the job in the United States and only hire 2,600 new police officers. So who knows how long the deployment in Iraq's going to last. It looks like eventually there's going to be some reduction in force there. But Jeremy Wilson, Associate Director of the RAND Center on Quality Policing, says the national law enforcement hiring market is caught in its own sort of perfect storm, stoked by intense competition for a shrinking universe of applicants, even as departments have mounted aggressive recruiting campaigns. But one of the things that's happened in these recruiting campaigns is that they're actually proselytizing from each other's agencies. So that's a problem also. So if you want a police job and you're listening tonight, I guess you could just about pick any major city that you want in the United States. And I've been impressed with these salaries. I mean, I really have been impressed with these salaries of police departments. Some of these are starting well up in the 50s, 60s, and even $70,000 a year. And with overtime that you're probably going to get in police work, that's not a bad way to make a living. One more story about the cops, and it kind of relates to the kind of people we get to work on that. There's an issue now with whether or not police officers, some already do, whether or not police officers, the Miami chief just said he's going to allow police officers in Miami to carry assault rifles. And the assault rifle that they're talking about is the AR-15, which is sort of the civilian version of the military M16 rifle. And he's saying he's doing this because we're seeing more and more cases where officers on the street, I don't have the data for that, but I'm trusting he knows what he's talking about. We're seeing more and more officers on the street being confronted, and they just had an officer killed, maybe more than one in Florida here within the past week or so, or a couple weeks, by an assault rifle. But he's giving officers a choice. He says the department can't afford outfitting everybody with an assault rifle, but you can carry one if you buy it yourself. Now, other departments across the country have outfitted them. I think L.A. has assault rifles, if I'm not mistaken. But in order to carry it, your own even, you're going to have to go through a training program and get certified. Of course, there's always the liability issue with that kind of business. So, do you want officers carrying assault rifles? I don't know where these things will be. I doubt they'll be walking up to you on a traffic stop with an assault rifle in their hand, but I'm not sure. But the larger picture here is that this sort of fits in with this militarization of the police that's been going on probably about the last 15 years. And I think most people don't like it. I mentioned to you one of the research students that I've worked with did a study of police uniforms and these uniforms' effect on citizens. He took a representative group of citizens and showed them police uniforms, a series of police uniforms ranging from the very military-looking black, salt-looking type of uniform that, you know, SWAT team officers would wear, to the more traditional coat and tie, white shirt, hat type of approach. And the people, generally, most of them preferred the old-fashioned look, the one where the cop looked like, the business professional. And, of course, that is not the best uniform to run after people and jump over fences and things like that, but police officers have done it for years, and there's usually some kind of uniform allowance. If you tear up your uniform during duty, then you get it replenished at the cost of the expense of the police department. But I'm just wondering how far we can go along, and you know, people, you know, we don't see cops wear hats anymore, which is different. European nations, they do. And I always said that, you know, you ought to be able to tell your police officer out on the street from the tow truck driver that's towing in cars. And some of the uniforms, which agencies have backed off on, are really unattractive. Some are wearing just plain T-shirts on regular duty, and I know that can be fashionable, but it isn't what most people want. They want that authority figure in that sort of traditional style of uniform. So it's going to be interesting to see where police uniforms go over the next few years, and we'll have to see. I do want to mention, does this sound self-serving? I just want to mention, I got the news of it today, and I get it from just through the regular email routing. Our book, Bob Molmanai's book, Introduction to Criminal Justice, we have survived four different editions, and the new fifth edition is coming out in October, the 2008 edition. And that edition is going to have all kinds of modern and update things. It'll have the Massawi case, the astronaut stalker who was, you know, the woman who went down to Florida to meet the other woman. Anyway, those kind of stories will be in there, and that makes it interesting. But Regal Hill spends a lot of time on this, and of course the authors do. And once you get tied to an introductory book that is somewhat or fairly successful, you kind of never get away from it. And, we have the fifth edition here, and my God, I know friends of mine that are up into the ninth and tenth edition on some of their books. So I don't know if I'll be able to last that long, but we'll see what happens. I think what I'm going to do this evening, and sort of signing off, be sure to look on the Blog Talk Radio site for Jumbo Justice Radio and see what's coming up. I'm trying to get you a surveillance camera commander, and they're trying to get permission right now. And in fact, I thought that would be done by this week. And I'm also trying to get a really crack traffic officer, a DUI officer. And I was astounded by that officer in Orange, California, that arrested, 254 people or something like that 324 people in like a year, 325 people. I was going to bring on an expert traffic officer who works DUIs and talk about that. I've never had a chance to really work with anybody where I talked in depth with them about that, even when I had some experience with police training academies here in Ohio. So I thought that'd be interesting for everyone to listen to, and certainly a good show to archive. And you know, these traffic officers, it seems like in police work, you either like it or you don't. There's not much in between. A lot of patrol officers don't like to work traffic accidents or even do traffic enforcement, but you know, it's necessary and they do it because it's part of their duty. But the ones that work in traffic sections are really experts. They get a lot of advanced training. Many of them become traffic reconstructionists and can make a little money off duty and that type of thing, as are our highway patrol officers. It's kind of hard to get highway patrol officers anywhere because they don't like them to be on radio shows for some reason. I actually tried that in another venue once, but I won't give up. So what we're going to do then is kind of play a little clip of the first show that we ever did, and that was on the Haitian prison system. And I'm going to see how well this thing works. I'm not going to play much of it, but I'll give you a little idea of what Blog Talk Radio sounded back in the old days when we did everything with the cell phone and we held the cell phone up to microphone. So bear with me. This will sound a little more primitive than what you're hearing right now. I think.
Thank you.
Worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you very much, Audrey. This is Keith Haley, host of the blog talk radio show Jumble Justice. I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so, and you can rest assured that we're allowed to run overtime on this show. We can go as much as 1 hour. I don't think we will tonight, but if need be, we can. Let me mention just a moment here about the purpose of the show. What we want to do on Jumble Justice is discuss the news and events and the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. It doesn't hurt to have a sense of humor as you work the streets or the prison ranges or in some other aspect of criminal justice. And this show is really dedicated to those police, courts, and corrections and juvenile justice practitioners that protect and serve us every day. And we indeed thank them, and they serve us not only in the United States, but throughout the world. Let me comment for just a moment on the blog talk radio technology and the genius of a man that put this together. Alan Levy has his own show on Blog Talk Radio. You can listen to that. But what this technology allows us to do is that any person or any interest group or any organization, for that matter, for example, the Los Angeles Fire Department has a show, can have a talk radio show on the Internet, streaming wide, worldwide, to an unlimited number of listeners at no cost. Which sounds almost incredible. You listen to the show on your computer under Windows Media Player, and then you call in using either your cell phone or a landline phone, or you can use Skype if you're plugged into that free worldwide phone service. What's on tonight's show that you might be interested in is we'll have the show. Usually would be divided up into about four parts each week, and we plan to do one each week. There'll be an in-the-news section, and that's where you'll suffer through some of my commentary about one or two or several news stories that relate to criminal justice that more or less are critical issues at this particular point in time, and some of them just might be hot issues. Then we'll have a segment of the show called Your Line, and that's where you call in to comment and bring up whatever issues are on your mind in the whole field of criminal justice or areas that relate to it. I don't know if we'll be able to do it every week, but for the next several
weeks. I'll play you a little clip of that next week, but our guest on there was Ron Edwards and Shannon Scott and some others, but Ron was here to talk about the Haitian prison system. And we had President Duvall's actual press secretary call in on that show, but I'll
take care of it next week. But Audrey's giving the signal we need to go. So, folks, I'm sure we're going to meet again. And I look forward to talking with you in weeks to come. And you look at the course or the website for the show and see what's coming up. Good night and have a good week.
We'll meet again. Don't know where. Don't know where.